Welcome to the Real Family Guys podcast with Jeff Emery and Trey Gibson, the show where education and experience collide to help you go deeper in your parenting. Broadcasting from Abilene, Texas, here are your hosts, Jeff and Trey.
Well, hello and welcome to this episode of the Real Family Guys podcast. This is the show where experience and education collide. To take you deeper in your parenting. Our date today is February the 20th, 2015. Our topic for today is going to be maybe you're not the worst parent ever. So that's right. Jeff and I today are going to have a great show. We found a lady named Annie Renault today that wrote just a great article on 10 things I thought were caused by bad parenting before I had my own kids. We're going to talk about 10 things that most all parents walk into really wanting to believe their kids are not going to do, and they often do it. So today is one of those great episodes. We're going to talk a little bit about those things that happen with our kids that make us feel like we're really bad parents, but really is just pretty normal stuff for all of it. Yes, even the Real Family Guys podcast guys deal with some of these things we're going to talk about today. Before we get into that, some quick housekeeping. If you guys want to stay notified of all the new shows that come out here at the Real Family Guys podcast, simple, easy way to do that. Jump over to the Family Podcast Network. That's right. That's the sister station of the Real Family Guys podcast. Right-hand side, enter your name or email address. That puts you onto an email list to make sure that you never miss out on that one show of Jeff and Trey's. If you just could have heard it this Friday or soon, it could have changed everything about what happened with your family that week. Guys, also don't forget, if you have any questions, comments, thoughts, a topic that you want to get on the show, we love your discussion. So consider going to the Family Podcast. Click on the Contact Us button up at the top, and there's lots of different ways that you can do that. You can actually leave a voicemail on your computer or on your iPad or your iPhone or whatever else. That is without having to make a phone call. You can do that. It's great, simple, easy, and wonderful. Let us know what your question is. If you have an article you want us to cover, simple, easy ways you can do that. You can always email us at treygibson@thefamilypodcastnetwork.com or jeff@texasfamilyinstitute.org. We want your articles. We like to talk about what you guys like to talk about, so shoot those over to us. Also, guys, if you have a phone, maybe you're out and driving, you just dropped the kids off at school or wherever else that you were going, and you thought, oh, man, I wanted to ask Trey and Jeff about this kind of question, or what should I do when this happens with my kids? Jeff and I love those questions as well. You can call us, 661-PARENT-0. Again, that number is 661-PARENT. And the number zero. All right, real quick, guys, I have a quick disclaimer before Jeff kicks us off on what we're talking about. Guys, I do have bronchitis, and I'm doing a really good job right now of stifling my need to cough between the hot tea that I'm drinking and all the meds that I'm hopped up on. So I just want to warn you all in advance, if I cough, I'm going to do my very best to drop this mic out before we get there. So I apologize in advance if I can't get it caught quick enough. Jeff, what are we talking about today, man?
All right, Trey, in my searching back and forth across the interwebs, I ran across a post from a clever lady named Annie Renault. I hope we're saying her name right. If this gets tracked back to her, maybe she can let us know if that's the correct way to say it. But she's hilarious. I've enjoyed reading some of the stuff she's posted on her blog, which is motherhoodandmore.com. And the article we're going to look at today is one that she wrote and posted recently called 10 Things I Thought Were Caused by Bad Parenting Before I Had My Own Kids. And, you know, true to our title, I think that her point overall about this is to help us feel a little bit better about our own parenting, because she reminds us from the get-go that parenting is a humbling experience.
Yes.
And
yes.
I was reminded of when I was reading that, my hometown of Lubbock, Texas, has produced just a few famous celebrities, but one of them that some old-timers might remember is a singer named Mac Davis. You ever heard of Mac Davis?
I have heard of Mac Davis.
Yeah, he's seen.
I couldn't quote a song for you, but I know the name.
Well, you know, he put out a really, really good song about Lubbock called "Happiness Is Lubbock, Texas in the Rearview Mirror." but the one that I was reminded of when I was reading her the beginning of the article here was, "Oh Lord, it's hard to be humble when you're perfect
right.
in every way." And I think sometimes I've run across. I run across that attitude, not just in myself, but prior to becoming a parent. You know, I'd see other kids, and I'd be like, "Ooh, glad I'm not that kid's parent." You know, and I'd be like,
"Yeah, absolutely."
If you know, if they were just, you know, like at restaurants, if the parents would just tell the kid to sit down and be quiet, then we'd all have a better dining experience here. You
That's
know,
right.
I
yeah.
was one of those people that was kind of judgy about the reason that your kid is misbehaving is you, right?
Right. I got to admit the same thing to this, too. I walked into a lot of these things and, oh, man, there's no way. We're not going to handle that. Oh, that ain't going to fly in my household. You know, I walked into all of this, and I've had to really start reconditioning my thinking. And that's a big part of what Jeff and I hope to do today. But I had to start reconditioning my thinking and understanding that a lot of these behaviors are typically just very normal.
Yeah.
And so if our kids aren't experiencing some of these things, we're not getting the opportunity to teach them, hey, we don't do that, and here's why. So if we went through it and we never went through some of these things, we never get that opportunity to set the groundwork for why we do or why we don't do some of these things. So it's great to go through some of these. Number one, it's normalizing.
Right.
And it helped us take a look at this and go, oh, thank God.
I'm not the only one
that goes through this. Even Trey and Jeff go through this junk, too. And I think there's some of that that's really normalizing. But secondarily, it also is a reminder to see these as learning opportunities and not something to be upset or to feel like failures for,
that's right.
But to see them as an opportunity to go, oh, this is where we can grow.
And so while it is a humbling experience, it doesn't have to be an experience that takes us to the point where we, like Trey said, where we have to feel like we're failures. This is just a, whoops, okay, I need to get off my high horse and do what needs to get done because parenting isn't glamorous. You know, some of us get into the whole parenting thing and we're holding our babies for the first time and looking down and into their beautiful little baby eyes looking up at us and we think, man, this is going to be amazing. And our brains flash forward to things like, their first step going to their kindergarten class and seeing, you know, their handprint pictures and then, you know, going to their first, you know, soccer game and then, you know, the middle school dance and then high school graduation and then college. And, you know, we're thinking of all these wonderful, sweet, but you know, these intimate family moments where we're going to be so proud of our kids. When the reality is, the stuff we're going to talk about tonight, or at least for the first couple of years and maybe on into teenage years.
Yeah.
So to kick things off here, we'll just jump right into the article. The author, Annie, starts off by saying, at some point as a parent, you come to the humbling realization that kids do things that defy logic, reason, and decorum, despite everything you're trying to teach them. She starts off with number one. I'm not sure this is a word. She may have like made it up here, but it's tantruming, throwing a tantrum, right? Now, Trey, I don't know what has gone through your mind specifically, but tantrums previously to me always seemed like a kid's just out of control. And,
right.
And you know, back before I knew that there were other ways to do things, I thought, you know, a good paddle would change a lot of things here. Now, obviously, I don't subscribe to that same level of thinking anymore, but there was a time when I looked at that and I just kind of clicked my tongue and tried.
Absolutely,
to
avoid me too.
She writes, whatever made me think parents could stop a toddler from tantruming in the middle of a tantrum? It's like trying to stop a train, a really loud, out-of-control train that comes out of nowhere, and all you can do is dive headfirst onto the tracks and hold on for dear life while a barrel's passed above you. You can try speaking soft, calm words to slow that train down, but it's a freaking train. Good luck with that.
Yeah, you know, I got to admit, this is one of the ones that, you know, this isn't the one that I said, hey, this is never going to happen to me. But this was one of those that in my mind, I never really thought about it. I saw those kids at Walmart, but I guess in my mind, it never just stopped across my mind that you're going to have to deal with a temper tantrum. And you know, Jeff, when you think about it, really, it makes perfect sense because the reality is that even as adults, we grow up and continue to tantrum in most cases. I've thrown temper tantrums just this week. Now, maybe I didn't stomp around or anything like that, but the basic premise was the same. I was frustrated. I was angry. I was upset. I had no idea how to get what I was looking for.
But I wanted everyone to know.
But I needed everybody to understand how upset I was about that. And so, you know, it makes perfect sense that we're going to continue to see these.
And, you know, that's something that we talk a lot about on the show here is that trying to get on our kids' level and understand where they're coming from. One thing to keep in mind is something I've actually been thinking about a lot for the past couple of days because I've been in some trainings where we talked about neuroscience and child brain development and stuff. But one of the things that I've been reminded is that all behavior has a purpose. Right.
That's right.
Kids don't do things for no reason. It may not make sense to us. It may be illogical, but it has a function. And if you can withhold your sense of feeling disrespected or annoyed or frustrated long enough to ask, you know, okay, why is this happening and what purpose does it serve? I can't tell you how many times parents directly go to, well, my child's just being disrespectful, or they're just trying to get what they want. And it becomes a, they're just doing it because they're a bad kid, or they're just doing it because they're being selfish, without without thinking, well, of course they're being selfish. They're two. They don't have the capacity to not be selfish. That's developmentally where they're at, you know?
Yeah.
And it makes
yeah.
perfect sense when you put it in the right context. So tantrums made a lot of sense. And I'm thankful that that was not ever actually a huge problem with us, because even though I agree with her that that I don't think you can necessarily stop a tantrum mid-tantrum, I do think that proactive parenting can minimize the tantruming. I think that proactive parenting and relationship building and skill building, with even with very young children, can avoid the tantruming process altogether.
Well, you know, by the way, we define the word tantrum here, too. You know, I'll give you a good example, and I did get my wife's permission to share this, but just this evening, we were sitting down, and we were straightening up the house, just kind of our evening chores right before we start bedding down, and my daughter, Anna, was in the dining room, and she was cleaning off the table, which is, you know, wiping everything down and vacuuming underneath it and picking up all the food crumbs, again, so that way we don't have ants. And as she was working on that, she was doing a pretty typical eight-year-old's job at it. And then my wife came in, and she goes, and she looked, and she said, "Anna, are you finished?" And she goes, yeah, Mom, I'm done." She goes, "No, you're not." And she goes, "What do you mean? I mean, look, like I scrubbed this down, just like you said, I vacuumed underneath." And she goes, "You didn't do a good job, Anna." And the answer was, I got up and came and looked, and my wife was right. It was not a good job. She hadn't moved anything, so a lot of stuff had just kind of gotten pushed under some of the other items and stuff like that. And Anna finally, I don't even remember exactly what she said. I missed it. And my wife, we weren't able to sit down and visit before I had to come out here and start getting ready to set up, because I wanted to know exactly what she said. But all I know is that it went something like, "Yeah, but Anna, you didn't do it right." So that's a little bit of a tantrum in and of itself. And what she was doing, but what she said there really, really hit home to me when you said that a second ago, is that her behavior, even though it was disrespectful and my wife didn't enjoy that very much, it had a purpose behind it. And what I began to do is I went in the room and I was sitting there, I was changing a little Axel Man's diaper and everything and getting him set up and ready for bed. And I started thinking, why did she do that? Because that's very, very unlike my daughter. And I started thinking, you know, to her, in an eight-year-old's body, mm-hmm. she just did what she felt was a pretty good job. And, I mean, she really did. She was underneath the table with that vacuum, sucking up all that stuff.
She was working her
thing. So in her mindset, she had done a good job. And my wife came in and acknowledging that she didn't do the job she needed to do. She came in and made that comment. Well, to Anna, it was saying that all of that work that you did do, that you felt like you've done, is invalidated. Mm. And so while tantrums can be looked at as very well, we hate them. Let's just be honest. We just hate them. They also can serve a purpose. If we can learn to cut past what we feel is the junk, mm-hmm. we can start to, like you said, as a great point you brought up, we can start to hear what they're really saying.
Well, number two goes right along with number one on Annie's list here. Number one was tantruming. Number two is whining. The poster boy for whining is one of my favorite characters of all time, Luke Skywalker.
He does whine a lot, doesn't he?
I was going to go to Toshi Station to pick up some power converters, right? Yeah, so
you did that perfectly, by the way.
Thank you very much. I would rather listen to Chewbacca talk than Luke talk sometimes. But he does eventually grow up and gets a little bit more forceful. See what I did there? But whining, man. There's nothing that gets on my nerves faster, I think, than hearing children whine. It can be a little bit worse with my own kids, but I don't even like hearing other kids whine. It just it's like that. What are those sounds called? I think there's a word for it. Or that you just. They make your skin crawl, you know, like fingernails on a chalkboard, and I don't know. There's just a couple of sounds that fall in that category, you know. Well, Annie writes about whining. She says, "You want to know how many times I've said, 'I can't understand you when you whine,' to my kids? 5,273,926, give or take a few. Seriously,
you
kids don't whine because it works. They whine because they like the sound of their whiny voices, and because Caillou." I love that when I read it, because if you've ever watched the French cartoon about a little boy named Caillou. It's been translated into English, and it is the whiniest little kid show that you will ever hear. And this resonates with me because Caillou. They watch Caillou and they're like, oh, this is how I'm supposed to talk. So
the reason I'm not laughing, guys, is not because that's not funny. I hadn't heard of Caillou until tonight, and Jeff had to completely explain it to me. So I'm walking into this with no basis on it. So.
You're gonna look it up.
I don't mean to.
You're gonna look it up.
I don't
later.
Mean to. Oh yeah, no, I've already got it pulled up. I'm gonna watch it whenever we get done.
Yeah. So whining. Now I agree that she said seriously, kids don't whine because it works. Well, sometimes they do. I'll be honest with you. I hear kids whine to their parents, and their parents don't like the sound of the kids whining, and so they cave. They give in instead of teaching them something better to do. So I'm going to disagree with her here a little bit. It does work in some cases, but it's one of those things that even when I say, well, my kid's not going to whine, guess what? My kids whine. My kids still whine.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, I was thinking just the other day as I came – it's so funny how these work. As we're going, as I'm beginning to see my centralized theme is that most of the time, all of these things that we have a really hard time with, number three is going to be really fun, but that we do them as parents. Oh, yeah. I mean, we really do. And I realized just the other day that as parents, we whine. I was walking through Walmart parking lot, and there was a lady out there, and she had a cart full of groceries, and she had her little, you know, probably five, maybe six-year-old kiddo walking beside him. And she was – apparently the kiddo didn't get something they wanted, a candy bar or something in Walmart, and was really just having a hard time reconciling these series of events. And his mom was just sitting there, and it was so funny. She was just like – let's say Patrick, stop whining. I just started chuckling to myself. Literally, Jeff, it was just like that. And, of course, you know, I'm sitting here. I'm riding my high horse, and I'm sitting there, and I started thinking about a situation that happened that day. Guess what? I did the same thing, and I sounded exactly like that.
Oh, I don't know why whining has to have that high nasally tone, but it almost yes. universally does. All right, number three on the hit parade tonight is nose picking.
Yeah, we have to teach it to them somehow.
Well, you know, there's a certain point that you just kind of have to accept things. What I've been hard pressed to admit is not the picking itself; it's that sometimes. And I won't admit to anything personally, but sometimes there's not a convenient place. Like, you need to pick, and you go to pick, and then there's not a convenient place to wipe something. And even though you know you shouldn't, let's just say that dried up boogers get found in the oddest places.
You know, that's the interesting thing I think about this is that she talks about how, you know, we outgrow it. And I'm in my mind, I'm like, no, we don't. We just become more socially adept in figuring out when is an appropriate time to do it and not do it. And even then, still sometimes. But, I mean, it's a reality. You get the dry stuff in there. You got to get it out. I mean, what are you going to do?
It's going to come out.
You guys had no idea what y'all were asking for with this show, did you?
Ooh, man, nose picking. You know, we've even joked in our family little phrases like, hey, you know that you can pick your friends and you can pick your nose, but you can't wipe your friends underneath the table. And our kids laugh at that, and then we think it's pretty funny until one day we find boogers underneath the table, and we're like, oh, where'd they learn that?
Oh, well, what have we done?
What have we done?
Jeff, if you think that's funny, it's not.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. We don't need to spend any more time on this.
We're just going to keep moving on there. So,
sorry, we just divulged a lot more personal information to you guys, and y'all probably wanted, so take that.
Oh, wait, were we talking about kids? I was talking about grown-ups.
Yeah, me too, yeah.
No, but seriously, watching a little kid, you know, go after something is actually, in my mind, more socially acceptable than pulling up into the turn lane, looking over at the next car and seeing somebody, you know, making the best use of their stoplight time by trying to dig something out of their nose.
And so what we're trying to – well, I'm sorry, Jeff.
This is a fact of life, and it is gross. And we do need to find socially acceptable ways of doing it. But if you utter the words, well, my kid's not going to pick their nose in public, I'm going to smile at you knowingly and say, just wait.
Yeah. Yeah. So bottom line is that if your kid's picking their nose, don't worry. You're not raising a socially goofy kid. You're not raising a kid who's all of a sudden going to turn out to be, you know, deficient and mentally deficient or anything like that. It's very normal for kids to do this. You're going to be okay. Your kid's going to be all right.
And the best thing to do is not yell at them. The best thing to do is to hand them a
tissue.
Just hand them a tissue. That's right. Hey, put it in here. Throw it away when you're done.
And seriously, and another thing, too, is don't be afraid to try to talk to your kids about when it's okay and when it's not okay. Hey, listen, when you're at home, you can do that all you need to. When you're out in front of other people, some people find that to be a little bit gross, and they don't want to see that. So just, you know, wait until you get home or go into the bathroom or, you know, you just whatever your family feels is right. I mean, that any one of those things may not be right for you guys, but it's okay to teach kids social boundaries and social parameters, even if you think, well, are they going to understand it? It's okay. Go ahead and talk to them about that. Eventually, one of those times, they'll get it. This is not in the middle of Walmart. It's not the place to you know, bury your finger up your booger hooker hole, right? The better place is, let's wait till we get back to the car, or let's go run to the bathroom real quick.
All right. So what do you do, Trey, if you're trying to teach them those social graces, but you're dealing with number four on Annie's list, which is not responding when somebody speaks to them? She says, two of my children have been non-responders, despite repetitive talks about it being rude to ignore people when they talk to you. One of them responds to people in her head and doesn't realize that the words didn't actually come out of her mouth. The other pulls a Marshawn Lynch and doesn't respond if he doesn't have anything to say. It just reminded me of the there's a Saturday Night Live skit recently with Marshawn Lynch in it, and so that just made me laugh because if he doesn't have anything to say, you can't get him to talk. So... not responding when somebody speaks to them. This leads to the maddening trait in parenthood that is, hey, Ethan, hey, Ethan, look at me, Ethan. Hey, I'm talking, Ethan.
Yeah.
And you're like, what is going on in your head? Or what is not going on? I mean, sometimes you wonder. You know, have they gone deaf? Is this selective hearing? Is this, and honestly, sometimes it's the kids just are peculiar that way. And not all kids do this, but some of them do. And ruling out some developmental disorders, this is a pretty normal thing.
Yeah. You know, our daughter Anna was, you know, when she was first born, she was, you know, she was real gregarious. And then she hit that stage where she just got real shy and very reserved, and we were I mean, like, for me it was like a ghostly thing. It was like, no, I mean, I'm your classic extrovert. I love being around people and I'm chit-chatty and I can hit it up with strangers and, you know, it's no problem. And so here I am, I have this daughter all of a sudden who, oh, and mind you, this is after her brother was born, and Grant is much like his daddy and he is very outgoing and gregarious, and for a while there he knew no strangers, and I mean it was scary on his side of it. So I had the two of us, and then Anna in there was just all of a sudden very shy like that, and people would come and ask her questions, and my knee-jerk reaction was that, once again, I can't have this, we can't be doing that. And of course I started, this is just me, I'm not saying that this is everybody's line of thinking, for me what I was doing was I was taking it as personally like doing a bad job as a parent.
Right.
So I started saying, oh my gosh, I'm not doing this. This is making me look bad as a parent. And so then what I started doing was justifying pushing my kids to respond to people.
Outside of their comfort zone.
Outside of their comfort zone, solely because I didn't like how I felt it was making me look. And of course, I would justify it very cleverly. Well, it's rude. It's inconsiderate. It's not okay to do that, right? And I started going through all these things. And guys, I'm not saying that any of these are bad justifications. For me, in that moment, it was bad because it was not about their needs and helping them become more socially adept. It was about not wanting to look bad, right? So you see the difference there. And I had to really sit down and do some serious thought about this. And my wife and I, we came up with the Gibson, you know, the Gibson reaction to when kids don't want to talk, is that what we'll do is that if somebody asks them a question, typically what they do is they look to us. They almost always look at mommy or daddy. They look at one of the two of us for like approval or whatever. And all we say is it's okay to talk to them, or it's okay. That's all we say. We don't say they have to respond, and sometimes they don't. And we leave it be, and it's okay. And then sometimes they look to us and we say, it's okay, and then you can respond, and then we'll do that. Sometimes they look at us a little bit longer. We might give them a suggestion of something they can say. However, not anymore. We do not force our kids to respond in these kind of social situations. The problem with it is that a lot of little kids are cute, and a lot of people that like kids like to really talk to cute little kids.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of times parents, a lot of adults kind of violate social parameters with kids just because they're kids.
Right.
And well, that's not fair. That's not fair to kids in our perspective. So we really let that be. And if a kid doesn't want to respond, I don't see it as bad parenting anymore. I just see it's where they are and that we can grow them. Because Anna has now reversed herself. She's very polite and very courteous. And you know what? She doesn't do it because she's afraid she's going to get gritched at by dad. Mm-hmm. She does it because she understands what it feels like to be ignored. So.
Yeah, there's a lot of changes that come, and just because your kids may be non-responders when they're younger doesn't necessarily mean
that's right.
And vice versa, right. Your kids may develop some shyness or develop some different reasons for not wanting to be the most vocal of kids when they grow up, and so you just kind of take it as it comes. But
that's right.
But you shouldn't think that it's necessarily due to bad parenting, right? Another thing that Annie used to think was caused by bad parenting before she had kids was tops number five on our list. She says, not going to sleep, right? Now, I have heard of everything from the self-soothing method to there's names for this stuff. It's not coming to my head right now, but letting them cry it out to to wondering if there's
baby wise type stuff.
Yeah, for baby wise stuff. But even older kids, when they can talk and walk and think and dream and do whatever they want for a little while before they go to bed. Even if you have a routine, even if you give them melatonin, it doesn't matter. Some nights your kids just don't go to sleep. And it can be frustrating, but thinking that it's due to bad parenting is probably inaccurate. She says on her blog, she says, some nights our youngest child can lay in bed for 2.5 hours in a dark room and not fall asleep. No exaggeration, 150 minutes. He'll talk to himself, sing. Occasionally, he'll call out to tell us he's not sleeping, as if we can't tell. It doesn't matter if we've run him ragged all day. It doesn't matter how calm and soothing our bedtime routine is. It's crazy. The kid's a night owl. Yeah. I think that this may be a genetic thing, the whole night owl thing, Trey. I myself am a bit of a night owl, and it's not because I can't go to sleep, because quite honestly, I have almost perfected. If you leave me sitting still for more than 2 minutes, I have the ability to go to sleep. So it's not that I can't go to sleep or stay asleep. It's just, this is like when I do work, when I get stuff done, when I work on projects and so even as I value that time myself, I am no kidding right now. I'm looking at the clock. It's 11:07, and I look to my right, and 5 inches from my head, my oldest daughter is sitting here saying, "Dad, Dad, Dad." And I'm like, "Go to bed." She's been in here three or four times since you and I started recording, and I'm just like, "It is time for bed."
Well, you know, as much as she's being so humorous about number five, not going to sleep, that one of the things I love about it is that she really factors. She does actually a brilliant job of factoring in the fact that each kid is different, even on a physiological level. Our kids are different. Neurologically, brain-based, our kids are all different as well. And so some kids are going to find it easier to fall asleep earlier. Some are going to find it easier later. They're going to change even as they get older. And I think that it does well to remember this as well. I am typically a night owl as well. I've always been able to stay up real late like that. And the older I'm getting and the more kids we're getting, like especially now that we've got, six kids, with two of those being foster, one of those being special needs, I find myself tiring out a lot sooner than I used to. But I've always been that way too. And I've begun to see the kids that we have that are becoming like that. We don't struggle with this quite as much on like a deep level struggle because, we don't have to do school in the morning. I mean, our kids wake up at 8. And they don't typically start their school stuff until much later in the afternoon. And so it's not really the big deal on that. But that doesn't mean that Corey and I don't wind up reaching this point where we're just kind of getting frustrated. I don't know if you guys have ever seen the who does the Go the F to Sleep book? Jeff, what's his name? It's
the reads it or the one who actually wrote it?
Yeah, who reads it. He reads it.
Samuel Jackson is the
Samuel Jackson.
Several celebrities have read it, but Samuel L. Jackson, I think, is the one
that's
most entertaining.
If you haven't seen that, you need to go to YouTube and look up Go the F to Sleep, Samuel L. Jackson, and listen to that reading. Now, that is a not safe for home or work video. Make sure you put some headphones on or something if you got wee little ears running around. But he talks about that, and it's one of those, even though he uses crude language in it, it's one of those realities that all of us as parents can
yes.
go, yeah, exactly. Because he says, because he's talking about this kid who keeps getting up and who won't go to sleep. And so he's like, he comes in and says, "You're not thirsty. That's an effing lie.
Go
the F to sleep. And that's our thing is that we get to the end of that evening and kids keep coming out just over and over and over and over and over. Dad, can I have a drink? Can I have a drink of water? Can I go to the bathroom? Can I do this? I'm like, why didn't you? Whenever we were asking you to get in bed, you were the slowest person ever. And now all of a sudden these little needs are cropping up now that you're in bed.
You know, Trey, I remember when I was a lot younger, and I've got four sisters, and so I'm sure that my parents had their fair share of telling us in sequence. It's not like we would get up en masse and all come out at the same time, but over the course of the evening, they would have to tell at least two or three of us to go back to bed multiple times. But the thing about it was, my parents, they'd get us all put to bed, and then they'd make popcorn.
No.
Yeah, and the thing about popcorn is the smell permeates the house. And
the whole house.
Yeah. And so they stay up, and they're making popcorn, and they're watching, you know, a movie or whatever, and I'm just like, that's not fair. And they're like, and I vowed to myself, this will not happen. And yet, do you know what I find myself doing? I send my kids to bed, and I pop popcorn.
Make popcorn. You were so wrong.
It happens. But yeah, I think you hit it right on earlier. You said, you know, some kids just have different biorhythms. And, you know, we can talk all we want about the science of sleep and how much sleep kids need and things like that. But if we turn it into a battle zone, I've often found that there's some nights that if I will just if I'll just give them some extra cuddles, all right, you're up again. You know what?
Yeah.
What you really want is some attention. And frankly, my youngest just turned 10. She's double digits now, and the cuddles, you know, her arms and legs fall out of my lap because she's so tall. You got to enjoy it while you can. So if your kids are still getting up, you might occasionally just pull them into your lap and cuddle them a little bit longer and enjoy a little bit of quiet time at night.
Yeah, I found that really works for us too, and we're having a hard time winding down. Just going in the room with them, and that we let them watch a show before they go to bed, and just sitting down and watching 20 minutes of that, it's amazing the effect of daddy just being in the room, how that can really draw it in. So,
number six on our list this evening from Annie, she says that being loud is something that she used to blame on bad parenting.
I had no idea.
Well, I think it's kind of funny. I don't know if she intended to do this or if it's just subtle, but on her webpage that I'm looking at right now, it looks like number six is bolded. Like the others are all regular, and number six is louder.
Clever. It's clever.
Pretty clever. She says some kids just have no volume control. Their voices are just loud. They don't have to be yelling or screaming or anything. Their voices just pierce the air. Even their whispers are loud. And there's really nothing you can do short of muzzling them. I'm reminded of the old adage, silence is golden, but duct tape is silver.
Yes.
Not that you should ever do that. I'm not advocating duct taping. But seriously, some kids are just loud, and I can't tell you the number of times I've had to tell either my kids or kids that I've been watching or supervising to use your inside voice. You know, like they understand that level.
What does that even
use mean? Your inside voice, and they're like, okay, this is I'm inside. This is my inside voice. I'm like, okay, the abstraction.
Is there a difference? Yeah, no. This one took me totally off guard. I grew up I'm an only child, and I didn't have any siblings. My dad is very stoic. My mom is very introverted, and so we had a very quiet house. My family's house that I always went to, on my Gibson side, that stoic mentality was very common amongst the men. And so they were very quiet and very low key. We just didn't get loud. When we had Christmas, things didn't get very loud. However, when I met my wife, let me tell you, there is no such thing as anything but loud in their family. And so I remember that very first, and Corey still tells this and laughs at me to this very day, but the very first time that I ever spent time with her family, we had gone to see them all, and the loudness level, we got in the car to leave, and Corey could tell that I was like, physically she could see that I was flustered, and she was like, what's wrong? And I said, that is not normal. And little did I know at the time, I was a young dumb kid, but I thought that kind of stoic quietness was just normal for what people went through, and I had no idea about this being loud. And so, you know, through the subjugation of my wife's family, I've gotten to that point now where, I mean, now it's like at home. I'm more at home at their house than I am at my house. Man, just because I'm used to that. And now that we've got six kids, I mean, it's just a constant state of loud and talking and screaming and yelling and running through the house and everything else. And so, but that was a big shock for me. And I really thought there was an element as my kids were growing in number and their loudness was growing. I remember there being a specific point of thinking, am I doing something wrong?
Absolutely not. You know, there's a definition of a little boy that I've seen on different things. I don't know who originally came up with it, but it says boy, noun, noise with dirt on it.
Yeah, that's right.
And
that's right.
And so you just have to kind of appreciate that there's something about childhood that comes. You may have a kid that's real soft-spoken and quiet, and that's okay. That's fine. Kids are unique and special and amazing, but some kids, I think Annie's right, some kids have no volume control. And so it's it's interesting the measures that we go through in different circumstances to get kids to be quiet. I mean, I'm thinking everything from in the school, you know, teachers clap once if you can hear me, clap twice if you can hear me, you know,
right.
That sort of stuff. I've even seen actual devices that in
shock them when they talk.
No, that's not a bad idea, but
oh no.
I'm thinking of the like in a studio audience where they have the applause meter, right? I actually saw in an educational store one time a noise meter that the teachers can have in the classroom that measures the level of noise, and when it gets a certain above a certain decibel level, it actually flashes a light, and if it gets a little bit higher than that, a noise goes off, and it stays. The alarm keeps going off until the sound level in the room, the ambient level, drops back below that decimal point.
Very interesting, man.
Yeah. So there's all sorts of things people try to do to help kids learn to regulate that, and I'm sure with varying degrees of success. But you shouldn't feel like a bad parent if your kid is just a loud kid. So, all right, number 7 on the list, fibbing. this can be a frustrating one.
Oh man, it can be scary. It can be scary.
Oh yeah. But once again, remember, all behavior has a purpose, right?
That's right.
So Annie says about her kids, she says, one of our kids was born habitually honest. I was that way as a kid, too. I remember the one time I lied to my mother, and I still feel ashamed of it. But our other two have gone through the normal little kid fibbing stage, despite our consistently talking about the importance of truthfulness from very early on. I couldn't believe it the first time one of my kids lied to my face. How do you even do that? They say it's a sign of intelligence. Sure. Let's go with that. It's better than the OMG, my kid's going to be a sociopath line of thinking. So, yeah, fibbing. I mean, we value honesty, but honestly, I believe that truth is and lying is almost kind of a social contract. Our kids learn to do it because it serves a function for them. And so, although it's natural for them to give it a try, I think that there are ways that we can respond to it without feeling disrespected, without feeling like you failed as a parent if your kid tells a lie, to just recognize that it's a normal thing for kids to try.
You know, this one's kind of fresh for us, and it may not be fibbing. I'm going to include this in there because there's not a one that it fits better in these last few that we have left. But we've stealing, and I'm including like stealing is one that's in there. Now, when I say stealing, what I'm referring to is for. I don't have this kid's permission to share the story, so I can't go into detail. But this kid has gotten to where, and it's not just for the record, because I know some people are going to jump directly to it. It is not one of our foster kiddos. It's actually one of our biologicals. And but we've gotten to this point to where we like to sneak food. Like we sneak food into our pocket, or like the other day I walked in on this kiddo standing on a stool who had built this crazy little contraption and had their hand in the little candy bucket that we have, this little reinforcement bucket, you know. And I mean, by the time I got in there, we're talking like it just looked like
a
squirrel with its cheek stuff in each pocket of this kid's short pockets, and they're just huge. And I mean, I came in and just instantly there was just a sadness there. And for me, I mean, that kind of struck me deep. I mean, I was really going to that. Maybe I really am the worst parent ever, because here I am. This kid is not one of my youngest ones. This is an older kid. How in the world did we get this far to where we can do stuff like this? You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. But again, you have to reframe these things. You don't have to. I chose to reframe this and say, okay, what is trying to be communicated here? And we sat down and we talked about it and we discussed a little bit about what it feels like to be stolen from, and this kid had never really thought of this concept of, well, what if somebody took something, you know, from me? Mm-hmm. And we use that now, guys. That didn't immediately fix the problem. We still had some other things that popped back up again. A couple more of the same type of issues that popped up again. We're finally starting to see some of the benefits. What we had to cash in on was, because what we were finding was, if we just said no, don't take candy out of the candy bucket, or don't shove an extra orange in your pocket and that kind of stuff. That's true stories. If we said those things, that really didn't stop them. But what we began to really place emphasis on is, listen, kiddo, we care more about you being honest with us than we care about this food.
Right.
We really do. And we had to really play that card hard. And what started to happen was, now this kid starts coming to us and says, hey, I found this on the floor. May I have it, please? You know what? Yes, because you didn't try to sneak it. And that has been one of the only way we've been able to produce some results with this kiddo, is just, you know, avoiding this whole let's make the food thing the issue, and move it back to, you know, we need to be able to trust you, son, because all these things that you want to do, the things that we want, you know, that you want our help with, these things are determined on the ability for us to be able to trust you. So just, you know what? Let's forget the foodie thing as much and just be straight with this. And that has worked pretty well.
You know, Trey, you're highlighting, kind of tying it back to what you said at the beginning of the podcast, is that all of these are, although it's kind of funny to look at them and recognize how normal they are, all of them are also opportunities for us to do something about it, to be able to teach them something and to build a skill, so that we don't have to keep experiencing these things. So even though we experience them, it's not necessarily that we're bad parents. In fact, if we're good parents, we will use these as opportunities not to freak out, but instead we'll use them as teachable moments. And I think that was a great story.
That's a great way that you worded that. I like that a lot.
Number 8 on the list. 10 things I thought were caused by bad parenting before I became a parent. She says, not washing hands after using the bathroom. Now, I got to say that there's all sorts of stuff that the bathroom is probably the least sanitary place in your house. No matter how many times you bleach things down, they've done Mythbusters about all sorts of germs that you find in different places in the bathroom, despite being on the other side of the room. It makes me want to cover my toothbrush or not keep it in the bathroom. I'll just leave it at that. So so this resonates with me too. You know, I love in the workplace, everywhere I've worked, it's a city ordinance. You have to post, you know, workers are required to wash hands. And in our bathroom at our office, there's even the proper hand washing technique. Here I am.
Yeah.
39 years old. If I don't know how to wash my hands by now, I should have the bubonic plague and be dead, you know. But there are, I mean, with our kids, we go through this potty training process, and we always wash our hands. You know, we sing the ABC song, make sure that we're getting rid of the germs, use hot water. You know, we've even, Ethan and I were discussing the merits of a Mythbusters show recently where they disproved that, the little hand dryers were more sanitary than just using the paper towels. Right. But I think Annie encapsulates this here in the second paragraph on this point. She says, even with all the things we do, it still took a good 6 or 7 years for our kids to routinely remember how to wash hands every time they went to the bathroom on their own. And she says, I can now add expert hand smeller to my resume. I've done that, Trey.
Oh, yeah. Let me smell them.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Put them out. Let me smell them. Right? So my kids have even gotten to the point, not just with hands, but even with brushing teeth, they'll be like, all right, Dad, I'm coming down for kisses, and they'll lean in, and before they kiss me, they'll go, and breathe in my face. See, I brushed my teeth. I'm like, yeah, thanks. I needed that.
So did you know that years ago, Walmart actually fielded a research article on the bathrooms at Walmart, and they actually found that, on average, there is more fecal matter that is on the handles of the Walmart carts than there is on the bathroom door handles in Walmart. Did you know that?
I believe it.
It's one of the reasons why you saw those little wipes that come right there at the start that you can grab and wipe off your handles as you go right in and stuff like that. And that's one of the reasons why they started putting that out there, is that there is actually more poop on those handles than there is on the door handles to the bathrooms themselves. So stick that in your pipe the next time you smoke it, and don't feel weird when you're grabbing one of those wipies and you're wiping down that whole little doodad. Whenever we put little Axel in there, he's our little 8-month-old adopted baby, we wipe that whole sucker down. I mean, just Corey actually went out and bought this thing that pretty much just layers the entire cart in cloth. So that way none of the actual metal and handle and all that stuff is exposed. And it's completely covered up. So, but after I read that article, I was like, never mind, you can buy two.
Yep, and as often as little ones, especially the younger babies, explore by putting things in the mouth. You definitely want to make sure this is a priority. But even like Annie says, after 6 or 7 years, if your kids haven't mastered this, don't feel because it's because you didn't say it that 1 billionth and one time. Wash your hands. All right, number nine on her list of annoying things that kiddos do, chewing with their mouths open. And she gives an example here of her kid, you know, chomp, chomp, chomp. Hey, close your mouth when you chew. Chomp, chomp, chomp. You know, and they just don't get it. She says it's like talking to a wall. And I'm gonna bump this one up. Not just chewing with the mouth open, but let's just talk about table manners in general, right?
Yeah, sure.
I mean, I think that that it's not until you actually go to camp and right on the mess hall you will go until you realize get your elbows off the table is something that you shouldn't be doing. But yeah, there's all sorts of things from talking with your mouth open to you know asking for the salt and pepper. Talking with your mouth open, chewing with your mouth open is what I meant. But I know that I've said it at least once, and I've heard it a thousand times, that nobody wants to see what you're eating. Hey, Dad, guess what I'm having for dinner? Seafood!
Seafood!
Right?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it's one of the oldest jokes in the book.
Well, you know, and I tell you, the reason why I think we're seeing a steady trend in this rising up and more kids that have poor table manners, can you guess why I think that is?
They don't eat at the table.
That's right. Parents aren't eating at the table. Kids are going to do what's the most easy, efficient, or entertaining way that they can do just about anything in life. And a lot of social parameters of things that are considered accepted, you know, acceptable socially have to be taught. And what's happened is we've turned into a culture. And guys, I raise my hand and saying we're just as bad about this, but we're not sitting at the table with them anymore. And so we're not practicing those mannerisms over and over and over and over with our kids and holding them to that. And then we're shocked. Let me rephrase that. I'm shocked whenever all of a sudden my kids are reaching across each other instead of asking people to pass stuff. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, well, I haven't been sitting down with them, you know, in the last week and a half to teach them this stuff.
So it's no wonder. Once again, these are things that as we're looking at our kids doing and saying tisk tisk tisk, where are their parents? We need to look in the mirror because there we
where we are.
All right, number 10. She just kind of wraps everything else up into a kind of catch all category, and she says all the other gross things that kids do. And so she says we were at a friend's house the other day, and I walked into the kitchen and found my kids wadded up dirty socks on the kitchen counter. My kid's dirty socks on the kitchen counter at our friend's house. Not my youngest kid either. One of my older than a decade and really should know better children. I don't even know what to do with that.
Right? I don't even know what to do with it.
Oh, my goodness. She says, picture a kid from a super nice family with super stellar parents peeing on his brother's toothbrush. Yeah, that happened. Oh, I hope that's never happened in my household. She says our five-year-old pretty much licked his way through Disney World last year. So many gross things. So if kids learn everything from us, you know, does that beg the question, do we teach our kids these things, or are they learning them from some other place, right? Probably not. It's not that kids are misbehaving or they're doing some gross thing because something is off at home. It's because kids are kids, and we did all sorts of gross things when we were normal kids, and their kids are going to do gross things when they get older. She says there's a reason it takes 18 years at least to raise responsible, socially adept, non-disgusting humans. So,
and even that's debatable.
Exactly. So I got to give kudos to Annie. I think that she wrote a great article here, a good numbered list of funny things that we tend to be pretty judgmental about before we became parents. But now that we've done this list, maybe we can realize we're not the worst parents ever, right? So Annie Renaud, hats off to you. Thanks for sharing that with us and putting it out there on the interwebs for our consideration. Trey, did you have anything to add to this podcast before we wrap it up?
I think this has been a good show, and I think it's good for us. It behooves us as parents to sit back and to remember these things, not even necessarily just because it makes us feel better to acknowledge, oh yeah, these things are normal. And I do think that's a big piece of it, but I think in a lot of ways too, it can also kind of arm us with kind of some grace bullets, if you will. And I'm sorry those are so contrary in attitude there, but you know, the next time that we're out and about and we see those parents that are struggling or they're having these things happen or their kids licking their way through Walmart, you know, to remember to extend grace and they're doing the best they can. And if you get the opportunity, don't be afraid to walk up to them and say, you know, last week we had the same problem. We'll get through it. You know, that kind of thing. Because I think it's good for us to connect as parents and just remember that a lot of these things are normal, healthy behaviors. And a lot of times when parents are in the middle, when other parents that we see are going through this stuff, they're so stressed out and how people are watching them that sometimes they have a hard time getting to that point where they can make it the learning opportunity. And sometimes we can help them out a little bit by just acknowledging that it happens to everybody and maybe throwing out an encouraging comment of, you know, yeah, we had that kind of thing too. It would just be thinking about that too. Maybe you can draw them out of their box.
Sure.
And put them back into a place to where they can turn, even looking their way through whatever, back into those learning moments.
I'm going to leave you with the admonition from Grammy. She tells me whenever stuff comes up and I'm telling her about things that happen with the kids, no matter what point, no matter what stage of development, no matter how often she's told me before, she says again, just remember, Jeffrey, these are the best years of your life. Thanks for joining us on the ride, guys. Have a great week, and we will talk to you next time.
We'll see you guys next week.